Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:07 PM, the Pacific Standard Time. Today is March 5th. I thought we'd kick off today with the transportation index because it's being led lower by the airline sector. The failure of Flybe in the UK has had a knock-on effect in sentiment, particularly for some of the more over-levered or weaker members of the airlines index the sector generally. But the problem here is that this looks like a type 3 top. We've had ranging with time, with size. It's been ranging now for 2 years. It's right in the low. There is a short-term oversold condition. There's no doubt about that. But there are exogenous factors that are weighing on the sector. It's quite likely that planes flying internationally are going to be half empty over the course of the next few days. So, in fact, it might be one of the more lower risk potential ways to contract the virus if one were to think about it in a contrarian manner. But this does not look like good action. And we've certainly had a deep pullback in 2018. It rebounded, never really got up to the peak. So what we have, in fact, is the uptrend from 2016, massive reaction against the prevailing trend, period of right-hand extension, and now it's breaking downwards. So we have type 2 top formation. We had the loss of momentum, failed upside break, massive reaction, right-hand extension, and now we're getting the downward move. It would need to bounce in a pretty emphatic manner from the 9,000 level to question that this isn't a completing top formation. And that would suggest that there is ample scope for a further exploration of the downside. When we look at, for example, United Airlines, then that is been the subject of a lot of negative press over the course of the last year. But it has clearly broken downwards over the course of the last 2 weeks. There's no evidence that it has found support. And it is rapidly unwinding the advance that was put in over the course of the last decade, falling from just under $100 at the beginning of 2019 to 50 and change right now, 50% on the downside, very large overextension. But it's a clear acceleration, and until we see a clear upward dynamic, the benefit of the doubt would have to be given to the downside. I had been highlighting the fact that Marriott Hotels has taken out an enormous amount of debt to take over Starwood, and there isn't going to be a lot of demand for hotel rooms in the short term, so the share is also pulling back in an aggressive manner. What's also, I think, particularly relevant right now is what's happening with Boeing. This is a clear breakdown from an overhead top formation. And again, this is further evidence of a type 3 top, where we have the ranging and the time and the size, and it's been had a downward bias over the course of the last year, particularly following planes falling out of the sky just about 12 months ago, and now it's extending on the downside, not only because of the delays and additional problems that have been highlighted as a result of the investigation into the 737 MAX, but also because of declining demand, because the airline sector itself is under pressure. The problem for a company like Boeing, on the one hand, not having enough of demand for the planes that it has been providing, and then not having enough of supply is another question, because a number of its suppliers are heavily reliant on Boeing for business, and they are major employers. This is one of the most important points. Boeing has got 161,000 employees, and the number of people that its suppliers employ in the USA, for example, is considerably more than that. So when we look at what exactly is going on in terms of the stock market, well, we know where the risks are being concentrated in terms of the immediate reaction to the coronavirus. We also know that there are risks to the banking sector because of the sharp cuts that we've had to interest rates. And the S&P 500 Banks Index moved to a new reaction low in here today. It is still above the nadir put in at the end of 2018, but it failed to sustain the move on the upside. It has come straight back down to test the lower side of the range. It's going to have to bounce and do so in an emphatic fashion from the region of the lows put in at the end of 2018 in order to confirm that there is a return to demand dominance. But it's not all bad news. Rebound that we've had, for example, on consumer staples is obviously highly defensive. We often get defensive sectors doing very well in the latter stages of a bull market, and that has certainly been the case in terms of the consumer staples sector and the utilities sector. And utilities have also rebounded impressively over the course of the last week. Then when we look at the Nasdaq, it is still trading above its trend mean, and it gave up some of its advance in here today, but it is still significantly above the lows put in at the end of last week. When we look at some of the most significant large companies, then Apple, for example, was down about $10 in here today. The pullback we saw last week unwound just about all of the overextension relative to the trend mean. And of course, the big question for the outperformers, the shares that are still above their respective trend means, is the extent to which they can continue to hold the lows. When we think about the number of shares on the New York Stock Exchange, for example, that are trading above their trend means, well, it's currently sitting around 33%. So 67% of shares are below their respective trend means. And I think a lot of those are in the Russell. So the Russell 2000 is now right at the lower side of the range that has prevailed for most of the last 12 months. And this is a rather important level where support needs to continue to be demonstrated. So far, at least over the last five sessions, it has held the 1450 area, and it would certainly be beneficial if it can continue to do so. When we look at what's going on elsewhere in the world, well, Europe is not immune and from selling pressure, and the FTSE 250 has again failed to sustain a move up to new all-time highs. It has come straight back down now to test the lows put in last year. So now the question is it going to be able to hold support around this area? The fact that the UK has weathered the Brexit storm relatively well, only to fall victim to the contagion effects from fears about the virus, are I think rather unfortunate. But the reality here is that this has been a choppy uptrend, and there is the clear potential that it is going to remain a choppy uptrend. The most important point is that it has held the sequence of higher major reaction lows over the last decade, and as long as it's doing that, then the potential for additional upside, I think, can be given the benefit of the doubt. But there is no doubt that we're likely to have additional volatility as long as markets are continuing to try and find a low. When we look at, for example, the DAX, well, for example, Germany is much more influenced by its reliance on exports than other countries, and even here the DAX index has just pulled back to the lows put in over the majority of last year. Of course, the other point is that a number of these international indices are back below their respective trend means. So that's, I think, an important point. Italy, for example, had briefly been able to sustain a move above the 24,000 level, but now it has come straight back down. So it has failed to sustain the breakout. And if that if this is a failed upside break, and certainly the dynamic of the failure was greater than the dynamic of the breakout, there is the potential here it is going to come all the way back down and test the lower side of the range. Italy is the country, however, that is being most adroit in trying to add additional stimulus, and they announced $8 billion in stimulus. That's still not an awful lot of money relative to the size of the economy, and I think they're going to have to do more. Europe has singularly been reluctant to further cut interest rates into negative territory. They're more quite likely to have to re-engage with quantitative easing. Of course, if they do that, then that is going to start to put additional pressure on their bond markets. And the quantity of bonds with negative yields is around 14.57 trillion and looks increasingly likely that it is going to move to a new high. When we look at, for example, the 10-year gilt, it is down to 33 basis points. And when we then just zoom out and look at the entire UK curve, well, not any part of it is negative yet, but 2-year yields are at 13 basis points, 3-year at 16, and if we go all the way out to 50 years, only 72 basis points. There is the clear potential now that we're going to see a number of the holdouts from negative yields, in fact, go into negative yields. It's a pretty similar situation for Australia, although their yields are somewhat higher. But of course, the big question I think people are going to be asking is, what is the likelihood of the Federal Reserve going down to negative yields? And the acceleration that we're seeing into government bonds is really quite profound, and the 10-year yield is down now to 91 basis points. So it has unwound the move that we saw yesterday for a little bit of weakness, and it's closing at a new low. This is a clear accelerating market, and the size of the pops on the upside we've had to date are not large enough to question the momentum. So a clear upward dynamic is going to be required to signal a change to the trend, and there is still clear demand for bonds as a safe haven, and that is almost universally true. Gold prices in here today were firm again and up $32. What I think is quite relevant is the fact that gold is appreciating in a range of currencies, and that is despite the fact that the dollar has been weak and other currencies have been strengthening against it. But it is most particularly strong against some of the commodity currencies. Even safe haven currencies like the Swiss franc, the gold price is also continuing to firm. It's also relevant that it is in the region of the previous peak against a number of the stronger currencies internationally, and it is looking more like a consolidation than anything else. So I think there is clear potential here that we are going to see gold resuming its uptrend. What's also, I think, particularly relevant right now is that the Dow gold ratio is breaking on the downside. And gold has been outperforming the Dow Jones for most of the last year. And this trend is still really quite clear. So the stock market has been outperforming gold for most of the last decade. That process ended about a year ago, or perhaps 18 months ago, and now we're seeing gold trending higher, or stocks trending lower against gold. Now, one of the clearest rationales for it being a secular bull market was the continued outperformance of equities versus gold. That does have to be called into question now that the gold price is outperforming in such a profound manner. What I think is relevant to point out is the 200-day moving average is not exactly the most reliable of trend means when we look at this ratio. So, for example, there were a number of times when gold outperformed stocks, even within a secular bull market, for brief periods of time. It's not the most consistent of ratios. But the process of underperformance we've had over the last year and a half is really quite impressive, and there is a clear downtrend. So gold looks likely to outperform the Dow for at least the near term, and a significant rally and deterioration in the stocks and a deterioration in the gold price would be required to break that downtrend. So we know why that might be the case. There is the clear potential that even if equities can find support, that the response and the assistance provided by central banks is going to represent a clear effort to devalue the purchasing power of fiat currencies. So you'll get asset price inflation, but also the loss of purchasing power. And that is quite clearly beneficial for gold because it's the barometer against which other currencies are valued. Silver has firmed from around the $17 area. And I think there is clear potential here that it is going to do better from here. Platinum has so far failed to rally, but it has at least steadied around this $850 area. Palladium rebounded in here today, so it is now back above the $2,400 area. It has at least demonstrated support in the region of the underlying trading range on a closing basis. This was the absolute minimum condition for it to remain in a reasonably consistent advance. So at least we're getting some steadying in this area. I think the gold shares were clearly a victim of the contagion selling last week. What we're definitely getting today is more differentiation between the winners and losers from the current situation. There is absolutely no reason why gold shares shouldn't be able to sustain a move up and out of its range. I'm going to have to put that back into local currencies. Certainly, $30 has been an area of resistance for the gold miners ETF since about 2013, but I think it is quite likely we're going to see it breaking substantially above that level and completing the base. The simple fact of the matter is that a large number of gold miners are profitable at prices in the region of about $800 or $900, and it is quite possible that gold is going to be trading at a multiple of that in the not so distant future. In fact, if it's $800, it's already trading at a multiple. If it was 900, well, we might have to wait a little while, but probably not all that long before we see gold breaking on the upside. And considering the fact that the gold miners are much more concentrating now on all-in sustaining prices and talking about trying to either introduce or increase dividends, and singularly refusing to invest in greenfield sites, that's generally quite positive for investors. It's when gold miners start getting confident and they start spending a great deal of their money on speculative ventures like new mines. That's generally when the shares underperform. We're nowhere near that yet. And when we then think about currencies, the euro in here today was additionally firm. It is now trading above the trend mean and it has hit a new closing high. It has not closed at a level like this since July of last year. Every down day we get further unwinding of carry trades, and there is potential here that the euro is going to rally further. That is equally true of the yen, and there is further evidence of unwinding of carry trades going on with the yen. When we look at the Asia dollar index, though, we are starting to see some evidence of some demand for the renminbi, and the renminbi did strengthen yesterday, and it is still trading stronger than 7. What's particularly interesting right now is the outperformance of the Chinese stock market, and the CSI 300 pushed on to a new closing high in here today. Now, I think it would be unlikely for it to improve upon that position, considering the volatility that we've had on the stock market in here today. But I think there is the potential that investors are looking at China as a potential safe haven, because they're perhaps betting that it's a first-in, first-out kind of reaction to the crisis. One of the things that I think is most important to monitor with China is how well their decision to get back to work is going to function. They're obviously sensitive to the stresses that come to their economy and to the global economy by simply shutting down business, and the daisy chain of liabilities that opens up the global economy too if China just shuts down for business. So they had to get back to work. They may be willing to accept the risk that they're going to get saturation in the population of the coronavirus, and they will simply decide to try and tackle it on a needs-must basis. Or they may just do partial containment. But they are trying to get back to work in order to avoid a sharply deleterious outcome for the economy and indeed for the global economy. So watching what happens in terms of the infection rate and the ability of Chinese companies to get back to work is going to be, I think, the linchpin upon which any kind of recovery scenario hinges. Then, of course, you have the potential success or not of the efforts to contain the disease working in North America, Europe, Japan, and just about everywhere else as well. What I thought was interesting in here today is Yes Bank has been taken over, or it has been offered to State Bank of India as a takeover candidate. The share was up approximately 10% from right in the region of the lows put in last October. This is a large upside key reversal. The clear potential is that it is now going to be rescued. There is much less potential for a failure. State Bank of India was in negative territory, but at least off its lows in here today. Obviously, they're going to have to put some of the money up to try and rescue Yes Bank. But the broader picture here is of a shadow banking sector and non-bank lenders sector in India that is getting sorted out and done, and that is happening without overly affecting the health of the wider banking sector. The Nifty index has been reasonably steady and continues to hold its succession of higher reaction lows. I think the clear potential here is that we're going to see a weaker dollar. And the dollar has been trending higher for most of the last few years, but these last 2 weeks on the downside have been really quite dynamic. It's been ranging below 100 really since 2015, with the clear example of the failed upside break at the end of 2016, early 2017. If the dollar does in fact begin to trend lower, then that will, on the one hand, suggest that there is ample supply of dollars. And ample supply of dollars is a necessary component for the health of the global economy. So that's, I think, an important designation. It would certainly help to avoid one of the more deleterious potential outcomes from the coronavirus, which would be a locking up of international trade. When we look at some of the liquidity measures, I think it is relevant to now start keeping an eye on the TED spread again. It hasn't been relevant since the financial crisis, but it's certainly become more volatile over the last 12 months, and it is potentially now in the process of breaking its sequence of lower rally highs. It wasn't really until it started sustaining a move above 100 basis points, that it was a sign of trouble. Now, when we then think about the overnight index swap. This was also a ratio that was quite relevant back in the period before the credit crisis. It became sharply inverted all the way down to the low in 2007. It got equally inverted last year. When liquidity really tightens up, then we start to see it surging higher. We have not seen it surge higher yet, but if it starts pushing up aggressively, then that would be, I think, an important point to monitor. When we look at the yield curve spread, the yield curve is generally an alarming outcome from the yield curve is when it becomes inverted and then shoots higher. Well, it's up to 32 basis points. It is not shooting higher right now, but it is rising. And we saw a similar situation to that in 1998-99. We saw a similar situation really in 2006 as well. So I do think the most important point, though, is if it surges through 50 basis points in a dynamic manner, then we do need to become alert to some of the risks that are outstanding in the stock market. Now, the leading sector in the wider market has been the technology sector, and the technology sector remains, I think, quite well bid, considering that it is still above its trend mean. When we look at the other version of the yield curve spread, and that being the difference between the 10-year and the 3-month, rather than the 10-year and the 2-year, well, it did spend a long time inverted last year. It went inverted again last week, and now it is pushing higher again. Now, this is quite similar to the kind of condition that we had back in 1998-99, or certainly in early 2000, and again in 2006-2007. So there is the potential that central banks are going to have to act very aggressively and try to steepen the yield curve in an aggressive manner to avoid or to react to a recession. They are doing so today in a rather quick manner, and that is something that could help to avoid a deep recession or a lengthy recession, but it is in large part contingent on what happens with the coronavirus and how quickly the peak infection rate can be reached and how quickly consumer demand and consumer habits will be reasserted. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.